welcome. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. We come to you every day here in this same time spot from 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, right here on the great GCN radio network. Welcome to the program. INN World Report, we are a group of alternative media activists here in New York City, about 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero. We got started back in 2001 in the wake of the theft of the 2000 election because we felt it was somebody's job, if the media wasn't going to do it, to get real news, the information, and information rather that the networks won't tell you, out there on the airwaves to you. And we began our alternative media broadcasting not that long after we got started, right in the beginning of 2001. In any case, welcome to the program. And we've got an interesting guest lined up for you today. He'll be joining me in about 10 minutes or so, I would say. His name is Ray Raphael. He is a Revolutionary War historian. And I've had Ray on my program before, not on this show, however, so I thought I would bring him to this audience, to you folks here that listen to INN World Report on the GCN radio network. We have an evening version of the program that's on Tuesdays and Thursday nights as well on the Rule of Law radio network. But Ray's been on that program before. I thought I'd bring him here so that we could talk about the real deal with the original Boston Tea Party that happened back in front of Faneuil Hall in Boston Harbor when the colonists wanted to send the king a message, King George, a message about the tea that was coming to them from the East India Tea Company. There's a lot of confusion about it, a lot of misnomers, and so we're going to have Ray come on. He's written several books on the Revolutionary War period. He's a very, very interesting guest, and we're going to be talking with him about the actual events surrounding the famous original Boston Tea Party. In fact, it was quite a radical event, and it was even kind of shunned by many of the founding fathers and mothers of these United States. It was a little even too radical for them. Benjamin Franklin thought that that the colonies should pay the king back the cost of all the tea that was destroyed that day, for instance. Anyhow, you can give me a ring. I'm going to open up the phone lines now, 866-582-9933. Any thoughts you have about these tea parties that are going around right now and about the original Boston Tea Party, call me up. I'd love to hear from you. And if you do, I'd be happy to send you out a book. I've got a couple of books here. You could take your pick. In fact, The Oil Card, Global Economic Warfare in the 21st Century, really, really interesting book by James Norman about how the price of oil is being manipulated up and down so as to basically screw the Soviet Union back in the 80s because they got so much of their hard cash, international currency, from oil sales. And now he claims that it's being kept artificially high, which, of course, is no good for you and I, but also is really not that good for the Chinese, who have to import, at this point in their development, half of their oil. I also have Jaded Tasks here from Wayne Madsen, very, very interesting book, and Dr. Mary's Monkey by Ed Haslam, who's also been on the program. These are books from Trine Day Publishing, TRINEDAY.com. I'm telling you that you can go there and find a lot of interesting books there, and they're so nice to donate these books to the program so that I can just give them to you. So in exchange for that, I give them a plug once in a while so you know where they're coming from. They're sort of, in that sense, I suppose, sponsoring the program. Anyhow, give me a ring, 866-582-9933. Totally toll-free if you give me a call. I sent out a big batch of books last week, and I've got another batch that's getting ready to come out. So if you were one of the people who's been promised a book and you haven't gotten it yet, chances are you'll be getting it maybe this week or probably next if you're in that second batch. It just takes me, friends. I really apologize. But with all the money that we're spending all around the world blowing it up and rebuilding it for other people, we just don't seem to have enough left over to take care of public services here in the United States. You know, I go to a couple of very, very large post offices here in New York City, and probably built back during the Great Depression, a sort of Art Deco architectural style, which kind of tips me off that that's probably back when it was built. And I have to tell you, there's like 18 teller windows, and there's only like maybe two or three of them functioning. And, of course, you know, there's less people that need the post office now because of email and things like that. But still, Usually the lines are quite long, and it takes quite a long time to get through. And for that reason, I must apologize. I can't go every day to the post office to mail that previous day's book. So I wait till I have a batch, and I send them out. What do you think? How's the services where you live? Give me a ring, 866-582-9933. The rat's crawling around in the subway. You know, you're standing on the subway at night. It's kind of quiet, you know, on the subway platform. You're waiting to go home, and out of the corner of your eye, you think you see something moving around. You know, you take a look, and sure enough, down in the tracks, they're down there running around in the garbage and whatnot, and, you know, peeling paint, leaking pipes, calcified deposits on the walls from leaks and so forth, and garbage, and you can write your name in the dust on the, on and on. Anyway, you know, that's the deal, right? I guess, the fat cats got theirs. They don't need the subway. They can fly over it, with their own helicopters, but, you know, the rest of us who require those kinds of transportation, forms of transportation, I guess it's just tough luck. You know, that's something else. You know, the double and triple standards in this country. If you're traveling through an airport, for instance, and you have to go through these long security lines and all, you know, it's one of the reasons we have that, I submit to you, friends, is that the elite doesn't have to do that. They've got their private jets in their own private part of the airport, and they just come and go. You know, yes, sir, thank you, sir, you know, and like that. They just get to sort of go right through all this stuff. I'm sure they don't have to go through the full body scanners and whatnot. I was overseas one time in a big foreign capital, and my wife and I were walking along the river there, and there was a woman with her little dog, and my wife missed our dog, so she always is going up to people with their dogs, and we're talking with them and so forth. And a very nice woman from Greece, and she was staying there in Paris at the time, and she had her little dog, and she said, no, she was just visiting in Paris. And my wife said, oh, that's interesting. You brought your dog with you. Geez, I always thought that was a big hassle, because you have to bring... you have to bring your passport for the dog and all this stuff and shots and all this kind of stuff. And she goes, oh, no, 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 no. She says, we fly private. You know, we don't have to mess with all that kind of stuff. Anyway, what do you think? 866-582-9933 and the tea parties. There was an interesting piece in Mother Jones Magazine. I'm going to have, I hope to have the woman who wrote it on the program, hopefully maybe later this week, in fact. I don't know if you saw it or not. You can find it on the web. Treason in the U.S., Oath Keepers and Treason. And the cover story, in fact, of Mother Jones, and it shows this young soldier in his camouflage with a hat over his head in the winter, it looks like, in the snow someplace. And he was... you know, an article about the Oath Keepers. But I have to tell you, friends, a lot of this stuff sounds a little bit confusing to me. The Tea Parties and that sort of whole movement. A lot of the mainstream media, and I would say even the alternative media, doesn't seem to be getting the story right. Very interesting. Even the mainstream media itself, which is co-opting the Tea Parties, and by the way, that's the subject of our show today. We'll be talking about the original Boston Tea Party with Ray Raphael, Revolutionary War historian, in just a few moments. But, you know, even the mainstream media that is covering these tea parties do not seem to get it, all right, that the Tea Party started as a 9/11 truth event and then were picked up a year later by the Ron Paul people who used them as money bombs and so forth. And I've even had callers into my program who are beginning to attend the tea parties. And they're talking about, you know, getting this country back and whatnot. But the Republican operative who's sort of become the spokesperson for the co-opted Tea Parties, Glenn Beck, he hates the 9/11 truth movement. Even a lot of these Tea Party people don't seem to know that. And I don't see any of these articles talking about it either. So that certainly is something that we need to look into. In any case, this is Tom Crowley, INN War Report Radio. We're going to take a short break. Ray Raphael, Revolutionary War historian, will join us right after this.
America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN War Report Radio with Tom Crowley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. Thank you. 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to INNWorldReport.net.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, Monday through Friday right here on the great GCN radio network, right here in this time slot as well, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And we have a guest who's been on our evening program on the Rule of Law radio network, but this is the first time he's appearing here on our daytime show. And I asked Ray Raphael to join us from time to time to get grounded with events concerning the American Revolution, the War for Independence, because that's what Ray does. He's a Revolutionary War historian, and in this case, I've asked Ray to join us because of all the talk about the Tea Parties in the news and so forth. To let's go back and talk about the original Boston Tea Party, and let's see if we have our history straight or not. Ray, welcome to the daytime version of INN World Report Radio.
Well, it's always fun to talk with you, Tom.
It's always fun talking with you as well, Ray, because I find that no matter how much I think I know about the Revolutionary War era, there's always more to know when somebody like yourself who focuses on it joins the program. Ray, I don't know if you've been getting a lot of interview requests in the last couple of years, but these tea parties that continue to remain in the news, it seems like the Tea Party is an event that is kind of ubiquitous and ambiguous, that almost anybody anywhere can claim in the name of the Boston Tea Party that they're in the spirit of the patriots who did that act way back when. What do you have to say about this shiny nature about it?
Yeah, there's something about the idea of people getting together and resisting authority and basically kind of declaring that that there's something about the government that's not right and they want to change it, so they just do it. And so you have people as diverse as Martin Luther King from the Birmingham jail is claiming the Tea Party as a press net for what he's doing. And the Ku Klux Klan is also claiming the Tea Party as a press net. They mentioned in particular that there was in Utah in around the teens, I think the 19-teens, around 1920, big resurgence of a Klan there. And there was a law saying that you couldn't wear a disguise in public, in a public assembly. And they said, well, what about the Mohawks at the Tea Party? And you're taking away our patriotic rights. So you have Martin Luther King and the Klan both claiming it. You have temperance people and anti-temperance people both claiming it. On and on, pretty much any cause, you have people on both sides of the issue claiming it.
Talking about temperance, is there any scuttlebutt to the rumor that they had a few pops, the original Boston Tea Party guys, before they...
Well, you know, drinking was was a common event back there. And the idea is to think that none of those people that had anything to drink that day would be pretty preposterous, of course. That was part of what you did, and you drank, and it kind of lubricated you a little, loosened you up and made it a little easier to resist authority. One interesting thing, though, in terms of the pops, is at the Tea Party itself, one fellow was caught pocketing some of the tea instead of dumping it overboard, and boy, he caught hell. I mean, he was the villain of the time.
I guess the one teetotaler in the bunch, but I'm bump. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, very good. But about the Tea Party, though. The problem we have when we look back on it is we take this very short, kind of cheapened version that's come down to us, and we don't understand the real politics of the time. And it's important that we realize that, for instance, the Tea Party was not about lowering taxes. As a matter of fact, the tax had just been lowered, and that's what created the crisis. there was a corporate tax break given to the East India Company, because the East India Company was a too big to fail company. It was closely allied with the British Crown, and if the company went down, the Crown would suffer greatly, and so they pretty much had to shore it up. And they figured, well, how are they going to shore it up? This country, they've overspeculated. They have 18 million tons of tea. It's amazing how much tea they have.
Wow.
And they need to dump it somewhere, you know. So where are they going to dump it? So they're going to dump it on the American market. That's what they decide to do. But there's two taxes on it. There's the Townsend tax that the Americans were resisting. And then there is a tax on the tea going from China or the Orient into England. And so the East Indian Company had to pay two taxes. So they said, well, let's give them a tax break only for the East India Company. They won't have to pay this tax. And that will allow them to have cheaper tea, and then they can compete with American smugglers. So the story gets very complex. You have smugglers on the one hand. Those are, quote, us, the patriots. And then you have the corporate giant, the monolith, on the other hand, getting the tax break. And it's not quite the simple, oh, we don't want to pay our taxes kind of story.
Ray, wasn't it the case that partially due to the taxes that were imposed on the tea, it spawned this black market? There were smugglers. They were bringing it in from the Dutch, I think. And then also there was a sort of a homegrown movement, you know. Reminds me of sort of the homegrown marijuana movement, but with chamomile and so forth, right? And mint.
I know. Well, you know, that's the funny part. I mean, they tried to get, you know, all kinds of, part of the patriotic thing when they were boycotting the tea, because, you see, the tea was the last tax item of the Townsend duties, and they had lead, paper, glass, and paint. And then they've rescinded those taxes, and they kept the one on tea just to prove they could. So tea, you know, was kind of the patriotic thing to do, to stay away from tea or to only drink smuggled tea. Well, it was hard to determine what's smuggled or not. If you go to your neighbor's house and they're serving tea, how do you tell whether it's smuggled or not? So they said, a lot of the patriots said, okay, well, let's try other things. Let's try Labrador. Let's try sassafras. Let's play, you know. And you get all these kind of herbal teas, or maybe some are little stimulants, but none of them pack the wallop that good hard stuff tea does. See, the funny thing about tea is it was also deemed a recreational drug. A lot of the puritanical people, you know, the moralists, they didn't like tea for a whole other reason. They thought these people were taking artificial stimulants, you know, like, you know, speed or you know, steroids or something. So, and doing it recreationally. So there's a whole, you know, there's a whole kind of a religious versus not religious kind of conflict going on.
I only take tea for medicinal purposes. But
that's
a quick question for you, though. Now, is there any truth to the story that I've heard recently that coffee became a substitute, and it became patriotic to drink coffee?
Well, yeah, because the thing, what happened is people were looking for something to give them that fix. And so it's not like that happened overnight, but that kind of opened up the market for coffee. People started looking around, like, what else can we drink? So I think if you actually, I don't have the stats, but I think that I've seen some stats in the past. I don't have them on hand, but the coffee importing started around that time to pick up, and pretty much it's just mushroomed ever since. And, you know, Americans started drinking coffee and never looked back.
Was there any logic for that? Was it because it was grown in the New World itself, and maybe there was no import duty for it?
Mostly it was just part of the mystique of the thing. They didn't want to drink tea, and it was part of the, you know, this wide draft for some alternative.
All right, good friends, we're listening to Ray Raphael, American Revolutionary War historian. We're talking about the original Boston Tea Party, and we're going to open the phone lines up when we get back. So if you have a question for Ray, hang on, and you can give us a call right after the break. I'll give you the number then.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising. no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 Truth Group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
Call them at 301-452-0090 today.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, Monday through Friday, right here on GCN from 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. We're talking about the Revolutionary Act of the Boston Tea Party, and we're talking with Revolutionary War historian Ray Raphael. If you would like to call in with a question about the original Boston Tea Party, please feel free to do so. The phone lines are now open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933, and pose your question to Ray Raphael. Ray, before we go any further, why don't you tell listeners where they can go to find out about your books and your latest writings and so forth?
Well, I've written four books, and I'm writing some more on the American Revolution and the founding era, and they're available. You can go to my website, rayraphael.com, or just Google Ray Raphael. Raphael is spelled like the archangel or the turtle or the painter or whatever, R-A-P-H-A-E-L. I wrote a book called The People's History of the American Revolution and one about founding myths. All the stories that were told are true but aren't, and the true, more patriotic stories that they hide. And most recently, I wrote a book called Founders, The People Who Bought You a Nation, which is a sweeping tale, which includes basically, I'm basing that on the lives of seven individuals, some high and some low. So, for instance, we have George Washington and a private in his army, and a much more diverse crowd than we usually get. So, anyway, yeah, they can look at my work there.
Very good. 866-582-9933. Give us a ring, and you can speak with Ray. I'll be happy to send you off a book as well just for calling into the program. So you got nothing to lose, and it's a very pleasant experience. I can assure you you can give your information privately to my producer, George, today off the air, so you don't have to worry about that. Anyway, Ray, the act itself was even a little too rich for a lot of the revolutionaries of the period, for their blood, wasn't it? It was kind of a little bit going a little too far for a lot of people. Ben Franklin, for instance, wasn't thrilled about it, was he?
Well, you have to realize that the great rallying cry was liberty and property, liberty and property. And then the first draft of the Declaration of Independence says life, liberty, the pursuit of life, liberty, and property. And now you have these people, supposedly self-respecting, patriots, destroying property just like that. I mean, you have to look at it as an act of kind of political vandalism, kind of like a Greenpeace movement or something would be today. And that didn't sit well with Ben Franklin. It didn't sit well with George Washington. John Adams, ironically, felt it was okay because he was more tied to the Boston, closer to it. But it kind of split the patriots apart. And that's not what pulled them together, the Tea Party. What pulled them together later was the reprisals for the Tea Party, and that's what led to the revolution. But, people... they had to dress up as disguises because this was an act of vandalism. They could be prosecuted. They could be sued. So they had to hide their identity. For years afterwards, secretly people might have known or guessed who was in it, but people that wouldn't just come out and admit it in public. For 50 years, nobody called it a Tea Party. That was a later name. And this, 50 or 60 years later, finally people started coming out of the woodwork and saying enough time had passed and kind of celebrating kind of the carnivalesque atmosphere of the Tea Party as opposed to the deeply revolutionary aspect, which is these guys had destroyed corporate property. It's as if we went in today. They're kind of like Michael Moore guys. They were going in and they might have gone up to GM and busted up a car or something. And, you know, then that's, you know, how do you treat that as patriotic? People were split whether it was patriotic or not.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's reminiscent of a lot of the protesters, for instance, that go to the, you know, the G20 and that sort of thing and these global government conferences. And, you know, I'm sure some of it is agent provocateurs in the crowd. But some of it might just be a real sense of frustration when corporate property is destroyed or they smash in the window of some national brand store or something like that. The Boston Tea Party is probably maybe singular in our history as an example of, you know, when people are pushed too far, that kind of thing can happen. What do you think?
Well, one thing that's different about the Boston Tea Party, though, is actually within Boston, and this makes it kind of a unique event, you know, it started, obviously, the smugglers were the main people to gain, but they also had the common people, the artisans and the laborers and the folks that were just kind of part of the whole patriotic movement in Boston had becoming more and more empowered by the whole protest movement. And they actually had a name for it. They called it the body of the people. And they, instead of just the town meeting, they opened it up to everybody. And you had thousands and thousands of people. And the night of the Tea Party, they had close to 7,000 people pouring out of Old South Church, you know, like hanging in the windows and just everywhere out into the street. And they were trying to make a collective decision as to what to do with this tea that they were trying to dump on the American market. And so you had this great popular participation. And it wasn't the kind of, that in Boston at least, it wasn't the kind of polarized thing that you have today. Usually now, when you have these kinds of grassroots movements who are basically, toying with the law and going past it in some ways, they're pretty much split. You know, it's not like there's everybody in the community is really behind it. Now, in Boston, what I'm saying is most of the people in Boston were behind it, and it's mostly people from elsewhere who were more reserved.
Friends, if you have a question for our guest, Ray Raphael, Revolutionary War historian, we're talking about the original Boston Tea Party because the Tea Party brand, if you will, is so much in the news these days. And oftentimes, you know, if you don't know your history, you don't know how true people are being to the original act. So I find it's always a good idea to touch base with a historian from time to time to get some historical perspective. If you have a question, or maybe there's a fact that you know about the Boston Tea Party that you'd like to bring up that we haven't discussed yet, give us a ring, 866-582-9933. Phone lines are open. You're welcome to call, and I'll send you out a book just for calling in to the program. In any case, Ray, they kept this out of the history books for a long time, too, didn't they? This was, maybe a little bit too much freedom or something, and it was considered radical. Is that correct?
Yeah. In the very early history text, in the early 19th century, they tried to pretend that it wasn't much of a revolution, and they actually expunged the term rebel. They refused to use the term rebel because this... Imagine these, there's a new government and they don't want to encourage people to do this sorts of things. The people who are writing the books, they want to encourage young people who the books are intended for, school books basically, to emulate their great patriotic, founding fathers. And they want them to not be the kind of people who go out and willingly break the law. So the Tea Party didn't fit well with that narrative, and it didn't fit well with the narrative that the big bad British were just trying to beat us up, because here in the Tea Party, we were kind of the initiators. And so it wasn't in the books until about 60 years later, it started getting more acceptable to talk about it, include it, and then eventually celebrate it.
You know, it's so funny, wealth and property... You know, it makes strange bedfellows, particularly when there's some warfare involved. I'm listening to this, it's like, you know, people want a revolution, and here we are bickering over the tea because it was the property of the crown or the East India Tea Company or whatever, the East India Company, rather. It reminds me a little bit about when they created the neutron bomb and all of the hullabaloo about that in the 80s because it would destroy people but preserve the real estate. You know, could wipe out all the people for a day. You know, the radiation pulse would kill everybody, but it would not blow up the buildings. You know, and they decided that one was too dangerous. Interesting. It makes for a strange thing. In any case, friends, give us a ring. 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933 and talk with Ray Raphael and myself about the original Boston Tea Party. We'll be right back with Ray just after this. Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, Monday through Friday, right here on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And we're talking about the history of, we start off talking about the history of the actual first Boston Tea Party, because the Tea Parties are so much in the news. And we're speaking with Revolutionary War historian Ray Raphael. I think you'll agree that Ray is very approachable when he discusses history and so forth. I think that you might find his books the same way if you're interested in finding more about Ray's writings. And, Ray, what's your latest book now?
The latest one out is that book, Founders, A Complete History of the Founding Era from Seven Perspectives. George Washington, a private in his army, the richest guy in America, Robert Morris, a kind of a flaming revolutionary guy who spread rebellion in seven states, Thomas Young. I've got a woman in there, Mercy Otis Warren, a diverse crowd.
And you're working on another book right now, too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm working on a book called Inventing the American President. And this is a great chore, because, like, we didn't want a king, and so, but we kind of went through a revolutionary period without any executive at all, and things weren't working out too well. They want to have some kind of executive force, but not a monarch. Well, what do they create? You know, where do we conjure this thing? And I've come up with some amazing conclusions. I mean, the research. The Constitutional Convention, for instance, for 3 months until the last 2 weeks, the president was going to be appointed by Congress. And that's the way it was. And this
sounds
one
like
guy,
a prime minister almost, huh?
Yeah. And this one guy didn't like it. Gouverneur Morris, he kept trying to change it. And then finally at the end, he gets himself appointed to a committee and changes it in committee and comes out of committee and everybody's so tired of it. Okay, whatever you want. And that's how we have a president. So the stories are amazing. A lot of these stories, when you get to the primary sources, that's what I do with my Founding Myths book. I go to the primary sources, find out what's wrong with the stories that have been filtered down to us.
That sounds fascinating. Yeah. Listen, Ray, like it or not, there's a very strong taxation component to most people's concept of the original Boston Tea Party. You spoke about the tax that was on the tea. It's ironic that a lot of people don't seem to realize it was the lifting of that tax that spurred the Patriots to make the Tea Party. But were they originally protesting against all taxes, or
what was
their mindset?
The concept wasn't approaching resisting taxes because they had taxes. They were paying taxes. They the main taxes actually were the property tax. That's most taxes most people pay. You have a tax, you get assessed, and you get taxed on your property. But that was a local tax assessed by your legislature. You know, the assembly that you had a representative in. And that was the key, taxation without representation. It's not being taxed, it's who's going to tax. Because England was constantly lowering taxes. England offered, you know, the crown offered to pay the salaries of the royal governors so we wouldn't have to. And so, well, we should be happy. But, of course, with paying the salaries meant that the governors would be beholden to them and not to the people. So we were actually, that was another fight. We wanted to pay, you know, the governor, which we wanted higher taxes so we could pay the governor. It's how you taxed it was the issue. Now, another thing here is people have the concept that the Patriots really resisted, you know, like big government. And that's true. They did resist big government. and big intrusive government, but they also resisted big corporations. You know, this whole thing is about the giant East India Company monopolizing and ruining American trade. And then they also resisted standing army, kind of big military, big army. They wanted a people's army, a people's economy, a people's government. And so that's the real thrust of the patriotic spirit. And what bothers me today is I see people getting kind of like just taking one of those three arms and just say, well, let's just get rid of government, you know. And then you get rid of government, and then what's to check the other two arms? What's to check the military arm, and what's to check the economic, the corporate force, the monopolies? Now, in the Constitution, they made a big deal out of, you know, separation of powers for checks and balances. Congress would check the president, vice versa. They'd both be checked by the court. They could check, you know, everything had checks on each other. You eliminate government and don't do anything about the corporations or the military, you got big trouble on your hands, you know. So, I mean, these things...
Kind of like what we have today, one might argue, but...
Yeah, well, the thing is, you have to go at all. If you're against big power and intrusion into your life, you really have to tackle the whole thing, not just one component. I'm trying to get back to that original patriotic spirit, you know, because small is good. Small is good. People should control their own lives. But you're going to have to be a little more sophisticated and go across the board, you know, if you get to do that.
If you want to pose a question to Ray Raphael, Revolutionary War historian, give us a call, 866-582-9933. I'll send you out a book as well just for calling in. Does this comport with your knowledge of the history of the patriots who founded this country? Or is this sounds a little different to you? Give us a ring and ask Ray yourself. Ray, the other thing is big military, right? George Washington, is it true that he said that we shouldn't have a standing army and that he thought it was, I'm paraphrasing, but was it George Washington who said he didn't like the idea that any of his fellow countrymen would be in the military just to earn a dollar, basically?
Well, no, that's not true, because as a matter of fact, George Washington was the one who wanted a professional army and was pushing for bounties because he didn't trust the militias, he didn't trust the citizens' army. Now, it is true that he was definitely very clear that he didn't want military control of the government. That was his greatest gift, was that to have a military leader who understood from the very start that the civilians should control the military. And, you know, that was the greatest gift that he gave to the nation. But he wanted a professional army. Now, a professional army is different than a standing army. A standing army is one that's kind of always there. We're talking about during the Revolution, he needed to raise soldiers. He said, we're going to have to pay for these soldiers. But to pay for these soldiers, they needed to get money. To get money, they needed to tax somebody. Who's going to tax? Only the states could tax. And so what George Washington wanted and other people wanted, when they were having another problem, they were having trouble on the frontier. They needed an army for frontier expansion. And they also needed an army because they were very worried about the rebellion in Massachusetts just before the convention. But there was no money, and they couldn't beg the state. So the whole point of the Constitution was to get money to pay for a government so they could have an army. So it's, you know, these things are all related.
Yeah, interesting. It sounds, it seems the other way around. But it is true that he didn't want a standing army, correct? He thought that was going to be a source of trouble if you had a large standing army.
He was kind of middle of the road on the stand. There were people like Alexander Hamilton totally wanted a standing army, and then George Washington's alter ego, George Mason, who was like the founder of the Bill of Rights and the Second Amendment and all that. He was totally opposed to a standing army. That's the whole point of the militias and the Second Amendment, and so. Washington was kind of playing both, he was kind of both ways on that. Like, he did have an army to go after the whiskey rebels, but Hamilton had to talk him into that. He was kind of in the middle. But the resistance to a standing army was very strong because their memory was what the British army was, and they didn't want to become that, you know, where an army could be used to suppress the citizens.
Well, the rest is history, I suppose. We've got a republic if we can hold on to it, I suppose, right? It seems like a lot of the safeguards
I'd urge people, you know, to really, like, if they're really interested in this, look at things like the Constitution from the historical perspective and understand what these people were after. And they were after, the, you know, they felt the country was about to disintegrate. And it's ironic because the people who are called conservative in those times were all for very strong government. That was Hamilton and so on. They wanted a strong government so that the country would survive. And now conservatives are equated with a diffuse and not a strong government. And people waive the Constitution, but the whole point of the Constitution was they wanted a stronger government instead of the old Articles of Confederation. So everything gets very conflated when you go back to history. So I say, you know, look at history for real. See what the real patriots are saying.
Well, that's why we asked you to come and join us today, Ray, and I'd like to thank you for doing that. RayRaphael.com, like the painter, like the turtle. I guess there's a ninja turtle, Ray Raphael.
Yeah, I'm very versatile.
Very versatile. Well, listen, thank you, Ray, and we'll have you back on as time goes, and maybe when the new book comes out, we'll have you on to talk about that, too, because I think that's a fascinating thing. You have this new situation. What do we call the boss? what kind of powers does he or she have? Right? Well, thank you very much. All right, friends, we've been talking with Ray Raphael and about the original Boston Tea Party, and there's, you know, so many misnomers that came out of that. But thanks to Ray, we've got that cleared up. We'll be back tomorrow with another show for you. We're talking again about the Supreme Court tomorrow.